Hadi, 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 hi. Hey, it's Jordan
it.
Here with JT and
Woo,
buckle up, love ninjas. It's big deal day.
Big deal.
Let's dig into that. This podcast is all about meaningful connection. We like really drive that point
home. Yeah, I think connection is everything.
We say it like we know what we're talking about. So turns out the man who wrote the book on the subject, the champion of connection himself, agreed to join us for a wild, joyful, and empowering conversation. Today we welcome licensed psychologist, executive coach to Silicon Valley's top executives, award-winning podcast host, father, husband, and author of Super Psyched, Unleash the Power of the Four Types of Connection, and Live the Life You Love.
This book is a game changer.
Yep. Dr. Adam Dorsey is here, mic dropping insights, detailing his connection formula, a personalized prescription to figure out what fills your cup. It is the ultimate handbook with concrete, actionable tools to live a richer life. Adam's book has received so much love and support from thought leaders like Lori Gottlieb, Mel Robbins, Daniel Pink, Guy Kawaski, just to name a few. We are beyond grateful.
Beyond grateful.
To be joined by the guru of gusto, the iconic bassist from the band Cafe of Regret. It is the one and only Dr. Adam Dorsey.
Without further ado, everybody, please welcome Dr. Adam Dorsey. We are super psyched to have you. Thank you so much for being here with us.
JT, I couldn't be more stoked. And Jordan, I mean, what a great green room. I feel like we've known each other for years and have had many beers. So it's so good to see you too.
That's amazing. So I got to know, you didn't always work in this realm. You know, Connection has become your platform. I want to know how that happened and how this book really came about.
It's so great that you asked that question because it even implies the nucleus of connection, connecting with ourselves. I had learning disabilities during a time that they weren't really well identified or known how to deal with them. I was just rendered dumb. So I was put into, you know, special education. Even though I presented with a fairly high IQ, I was put with the this is the 1970s, but for those who remember Welcome Back, Kotter, there was this TV show in the 70s about the sweat hogs and these kids who weren't doing very well. I was in that group. And I was identified by my fellow students as kind of a dum-dum. And that was what I marinated in for many, many years. Unbeknownst to me, I had dyslexia and ADHD of the inattentive type. So I wasn't a problem to anybody else. I wasn't swinging from chandeliers like the kind of hyperactive kids, but I was just kind of staring out the window looking at squirrels, and because squirrels are awesome. And what are they doing out there? Oh my gosh, look what I go. Anyway, don't even start on, you know, like how great things are outside the classroom. So it took me a long, long time to find my intelligence, my truth, my connection to myself, and to kind of emancipate myself from old messages that were not serving me. So somewhere in my 20s, I realized I wanted to be a psychologist, but I also realized that I was having trouble in school and I didn't seem to have the intellectual capacity for it all and the discipline. And after having put myself through a whole bunch of difficult challenges, I called it my Navy SEALs self-imposed kind of executive functioning training to get my brain more online when it had been offline. I was in the corporate world. I was doing fine. I had a master's degree and I thought that would be it. And it was just terminal, but I married a psychologist and every day during dinner, like telling me about her day, like, how's your day, honey? And I tell her about my day. She tell me about hers. And I listen about her day. And I think, damn, I want that day. And she kept on saying, honey, it's not too late. And I said, babe, we have a house. We have a child. We're going to have another one at some point. This is stupid. I made my bed. I need to sleep in it. And she just, to her credit, kept on drilling it in. I want you to have a good life.
Love her.
I married ridiculously well. If I've done one thing really well in my life, the two of you clearly have, like, there is a vibe between the two of you that tells me that things are really good in your home. But a buddy of mine weighed in. His name is Aaron. He's a real big part of the story. But finally, I got it together. And as soon, it's so interesting, as soon as I doubled down and said, I'm doing this, it's like the cells in my body all got together and said, we're in. When it's almost like I was like a crap PR representative to the cells of my body until that point in my corporate world. In terms of marriage, the cells in my body were like, yeah, we're all in. But in terms of, you know, as Freud said, love and marriage, it's basically love and work are the two biggest components of our life. I crushed it in love, and that's a big one. But in work, I hadn't. And up until that point, your question, JT, I finally found a connection to myself.
Oh, that's truly amazing. We absolutely ate up your book.
Oh, Super dude, thanks.
Was truly life-changing for us. And I feel like I already know you, not just from your book, but Cafe of Regret, Dyslexia. I am also deemed special education and didn't let that hold me back. And I just can't tell you how inspired we are by this book. I want to know more about these four types of connection, and I've never been able to really define it myself. Could you help us sort of define connection and explain the four types a little bit more for us?
I'm really glad you asked that question, JT. It's really interesting because there are books on connecting with your spouse, connecting with your kids, connecting with your clients, but there's never really been a book that I've seen about connecting in general. Like, what is connection? If you look it up in the dictionary, it's basically linking two things together. People say, I want more connection in my life, that's not what they're talking about. When I get a little bit riled up, I suddenly get my Seinfeld voice. That's not what they're talking about.
Very much welcome here. Yes.
Why did you keep the pen? Anyway. I thought, you know, if in 20,000 hours of providing psychotherapy, one of the most frequently used word is this thing called connection. And if you look through our diagnostic Bible, it's known as the DSM, you'll see that virtually every major classification of diagnosis, that the things that we don't want, contain disconnection as a trait. So depression is oftentimes, you know, a disconnection from the present because we're thinking about the past. That's a component of depression, rumination. What about catastrophization and future tripping? That's a part of anxiety. We're not connected with the present. With dissociation, which is a component of trauma, we're not connecting with ourselves, or depersonalization. We're actually almost outside our bodies. And when it comes down to serious mental illness like psychosis, we have a break from reality itself. So if at the core of everything we don't want is disconnection, it seems logical that at the core of everything we do want is connection. And that's been corroborated by everything everybody's been telling me ever since I started working.
20,000 hours.
Exactly. So I went about trying to 20,000 hours. So I went about defining, like, what is, it's funny, the American Psychological Association does not have a definition for connection. Strange.
I couldn't find one.
Yeah, right. And you look it up in Webster's and it's like, okay, that's definitely not what they're talking about when they say they want more of that. So I went about lassoing 10 of my fellow licensed mental health professionals to see if we could co-create a working definition of what people probably mean when they say connection. And what we've come to is it's an emotional response. It is an aliveness. It is vitality. It is life force. So, like, if I was to say to you, remember that time you heard that song that changed your life, or remember that person you talked to for 2 hours and it felt like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Nobody needed to explain what you were feeling to you. You just knew you were really on fire. The first time I heard Stairway to Heaven, for example, like per Jack Black, the greatest rock and roll song of all time. Yes. You know, you hear it and for the very first time in your life, and you're just like, at least for me, I know this isn't it. And on the opposite side, in the opposite sphere, Hell's Bells by AC/DC, another song that at first time I heard either of those songs, Heaven and Hell, I knew these were my jams. Tom Sawyer by Rush, another one of these songs that
like, he's mentioned. JP, yes, my man, and Rush in the same sentence. I'm not able to keep a train of thought.
You're connecting, man.
I'm connecting. But so that's what connection is. Like, the very first time I heard, this is like, I'm 13 years old or 12 years old, I hear that sound for Tom Sawyer. Yep. And I'm like, my life just changed. You know, like that's connection. That is a form of connection. The first time I hung out with my wife and I was like, oh my God, I feel forever here. I knew that that was connection. So what I wanted to do was say, how do humans connect? And there are four ways that I was able to identify. And I don't think anybody's, and no one has been able to negate this. So I'm open to the possibility that there might be a fifth, but so far we've got just four. So imagine basically an archery target and we've got a bullseye, and that's connecting with yourself. It informs all of your other connections. If you're not connected to yourself, you can't really do very well at connecting with others or the other three. But as we ripple out, connection to others. So connection to others is, for example, the two of you connecting your significant other. Perhaps, I don't know if you can see my little kitty cat behind me. Oh. She's just chilling back there. I included pets. I include friends, of course, children, clients, other family members are others. Kind of like in Sesame Street, the people that you meet when you're walking down the street, those are others. The world is the third circle. The world includes work. It includes nature, art. It includes our ancestry. As Maya Angelou once told us, we don't know where we're going if we don't know where we're from. Mm-hmm. And so ancestry is a really big deal. And the fourth is connecting to something greater. For some people, it means going to church on Sundays. Mm-hmm. For the non-religious, they may find that going to the Grand Canyon or closer to you, the Garden of the Gods, they will experience what's called awe. And awe has been put under the microscope and explored via research. So an Orthodox atheist goes to a beautiful place, mm-hmm. and suddenly they're just like, what the bah? You know, they're like rendered speechless. Exactly. Humana, like, what am I seeing here? And I'm in the Grand Canyon forged by, thank you, Colorado River. Sorry, I'm totally catering to the home team. Let's face it, it's called awe. And one of the things that happens when we're in awe is they've actually looked at our brains when we're in a state of awe. It's very similar to the representation of our brain states when we're on psilocybin, which is the component in magic mushrooms, except you don't need to take anything illegal or potentially dangerous. Even though magic mushrooms have been showing some promise with certain forms of therapy.
All the buzz.
Exploding here. Absolutely.
All the buzz. Another Colorado.
In Colorado as well. Yeah. And it's very exciting. But you don't have to do any of that stuff. Strangers start hugging strangers when they are like up in Oregon during the solar eclipse. They were so in awe, like they stopped caring about themselves. They just like were more others focused. So wow. That's the fourth realm. So basically connection to self, others, the world, and something greater are the four ways we connect. And I really wanted to do a deep dive into all four.
Wow. And so you're saying we all stand a chance.
We all stand a chance.
Even if you're a non-believer, you get out there for that eclipse.
And, I got to go there, Jordan, because like, you know, you said we all stand a chance. You've just made me think of Jim Carrey. So you're saying there's a chance.
Chance. Off, huh? Exactly. So this title, though, super psyched. Like I, as the joy train captain over here, got on board immediately. But how can you explain, are we not getting in that toxic positivity or forced optimism realm? Because that's something we've discussed here on this platform. And so I'm curious about that.
I'm so glad you asked that question. You know, like we know for sure, nothing feels crappier than somebody when you're in a down state trying to bring you into a joyful state immediately. We want to be met where we are.
Authenticity
is like, wow. Like, I don't know if you ever saw Parks and Recreation, but there's a scene where Anne and Chris Traeger are together and he's just like, Mr. Like, hey, isn't everything great? And she says, I need you to tell me it sucks.
Yes. Be in the muck with me. Be in the muck like your amazing TEDx talk.
Totally be in the muck with me. And so that's what we want. We don't want to feel alone. And so toxic positivity is nasty. So super psyched doesn't necessarily just mean being super psyched, like I'm super psyched to see the two of you in our common vernacular. But it also means super connected to our psyches. Like if I'm feeling happy, I'm in touch with that. If I'm feeling grief stricken, I'm in touch with that too. And we're meant to feel all of the colors of the rainbow, so to speak, while we're alive. Like we, as every intelligent person said, we can't know true joy unless we know true sadness. We need a basis of comparison. There's an old joke of, you know, the wife asking the husband, honey, do you love me? And he says, compared to whom? And one of the reasons that I would surmise that the two of you have such a good relationship is that you have had life experience before you met and you have a basis of comparison. Like one of the reasons I love my wife so much is, holy smokes, I have, you know, I've been out there in the world and I can recognize her value. Like, oh my God, like I scored. So we need to know what else is out there. We need to know all of the emotions. I mean, there's a time for, well, you know, Ecclesiastes talks about the seasons, for there's a time for everything. There's a time for reggae music. There's a time for hard rock. There's a time for classical. There's a time for really sad music. There's a time for Enya. There's a, and you wouldn't want to play Enya at a rave.
More of that bass.
Drop the beat.
What? Say where the road goes.
This is magic. I'm so lucky to be at the show. So what are these disconnectors then? Because it seems like for me, like I take this free time and I'm just going to make it. Yeah, I'm going to slip into these bad habits of disconnecting.
Let me start scrolling on my phone. And...
yeah. And so I feel really responsible for my behavior. So what are some disconnectors that we should be, or what does that mean?
We have the most magical thing between our ears. It's the most complex structure in the known universe. It's the human brain. And what's so interesting about the brain is it's been the same for at least 35,000 years. Some even estimate it's been the same for 100,000 years, but somewhere between 35,000 and 100,000 years, this brain has had two directives: conserve energy and let us survive. Those are the things. And as a result, we have at least 200 known cognitive biases that can screw us up. Everything from FOMO, which somebody on my own podcast actually identified, Christopher McGinnis. Did I get his right name right? Oh, that feels crappy. I forget his full name. But anyway, he's a brilliant guy and I love him and his work. But the negativity bias, when we have 100 things that go well and one thing that goes crappy on a vacation, we're flying home, what's the thing we remember? You know, bad ways more than good. So there are all these cognitive biases that are disconnectors. And I call them disconnectors because they keep us from connecting with what's going on. I'm going up the mountain with my son and he tells me, just told me that he really wants to spend his summer vacations away. And that's really sad for me. And we're seeing this unbelievable sunset. And
you're not seeing it. Your heart's broken.
It's really hard to see in that moment. It's like, damn, my son is not going to want to be around me as much. But it's absolutely positively not personal. It's just that he's going on his own adventure. And I'm like, dude, you're like one of my favorite people in the world. I changed your diapers and you're not going to, anyway. And it's like, so. But it's my job to find a way to see the beautiful sunset. He had just driven up this in our 4x4 up this like massive, like hilly, bumpy ride to see the most magnificent sunset of all time. This is all I can describe it as. And it's so easy to, it may sound like a contradiction of terms because I was simultaneously in a slightly grief-stricken state and there was something else going on. So sometimes we need to also ask ourselves what else is true. It sucks that he's not going to be coming home. And wow, there is a sunset and we are together right now. Mm-hmm. So there are so many ways that we can potentially disconnect. As you were saying, the phone is one of the biggest ones. I've come to realize that I have something akin. I thankfully do not suffer from any form of gluten intolerance, but I have a news intolerance because I've noticed that the half-life of news circulating around in my brain, like if I'm trying to zero in on my wife or my kids or my work, I do a crap job of it if I've just read something that really I found disturbing. So I limit my intake. Everybody needs to know what their intake levels are. If I'm with my wife, I do my very best. I mean, my God, the lure of that blue light on my phone saying, feed me, look at me. And it's like, but wait, I've got my sweetheart right here. So one of the things that's really been happening for many, many couples is that they feel almost like there is a third party in their relationship, and that is a disconnector as well. So there are many, I'm just kind of giving a brief overview. There are so many other disconnectors that show up that keep us from connecting with ourselves, others, the world, and something greater, but it's our job to recognize them. We need to name them and tame them.
That awareness there. Because yeah, that third party, not a physical human invading on your primary relationship there, but say you're gaming or alcohol,
Sports
are my problem. Yes. If the game's on, I'm talking to the Golden State Warriors.
Well, you know, it's fine with, I'm guessing it's fine with informed consent and plans to connect at other times. Perhaps.
Yes.
I don't know.
He's very proactive.
Last night, the Nuggets game happened at 8 o'clock in our time, and we had planned for days. Like, this is what I will be doing at 8 o'clock. And so that's exactly how we manage that.
That's amazing. And tonight my Warriors are going to be playing and God willing, win against the Houston Rockets, obviously.
Yes.
But my wife knows that I'll be watching. And,
and the introverted wife found plenty to do.
She'll have plenty to do. And it's all about, informed consent, about letting the other party know, hey, look, you know, how will we be able to get, you know, our needs as a couple met so that I can still watch my sports.
Great to watch when I know it fills his cup so much, that joy, and he's cheering. And so, but I do have, you have a tip in your book that was a game changer for me that I hadn't aptly named, but I realized there was something special there. The drive-away test. As a conflict averse people pleaser, I would get in my car and moan with like, I'm exhausted.
Only child. Lots of people relying on you.
And I was struggling, you know, perhaps in certain relationships that were no longer feeding me perhaps, but I think applying it, super psyched, got me excited about this could work for everything. I need to check in with me on the people pleasing and be like, did I like that? So can you tell us about the drive away test?
I love that you love that. And, you know, I remember I was driving up to see my buddy, Bob. He is one of the greatest human beings on the planet, except for the fact that he lives 2 hours away from me. And the place that we can meet halfway is in the city, which always involves traffic and parking and blah, blah, blah. And on a Saturday, I don't know if I want to go. And then I hang out with Bob and it's the best 4 hours I could ever want. I get in my car and I feel taller. And I came up with this concept called the driveway test to measure how do you feel after a hang? And do you feel taller? Do you feel heard? Do you feel happy? Is your body just singing? Or do you feel used, like, or and exhausted and maybe even deflated? Like, I'm sure you've been with somebody who you were telling about your life and they bring it right back to themselves. And they're like, oh, you just went there. I went there and blah, blah, blah. And they go on a 20-minute diatribe. And it's like, wait, isn't there supposed to be like a back and forth? and there's none. And so you get in the car and you're just like, screw me. And unfortunately, due to a whole bunch of other disconnectors from self, including, you know, overblown loyalty, as you know, who was it who said this? It was Aristotle, I believe. I'm not a Greek scholar, but Aristotle, I believe, said that in an overblown virtue becomes a vice. So if you are too loyal, so loyal to the other, you cease to be loyal to yourself. And so in that moment, you know, you can say, okay, I'll just go back. And of course, I'll see this person out of obligation and loyalty, blah, blah, blah. Well, we only have so many heartbeats in this lifetime. Do you really want to invest those? Like, sometimes you have to, sometimes you gotta do it. And sometimes a great person renders a not so great hang. Sometimes they are, you know, sometimes the driveway test is not great, but you know that there is more depth there and that this was a one-off. But if it becomes a trend, you might want to consider how you invest your time with your friends. So this was what I called the driveway test. It can be a driveway test from anybody. It could be friends, family, whomever. But for sure, it's a really important measure. It's also known in psychology as a cognitive after image. Like to borrow from what happens when we're at Disneyland, and I'm so sorry I'm doing this to the two of you and to the listeners, but when you walk by It's a Small World, what do you hear for the rest of the day? And that is the same thing as the driveway test. It's like, it's how, what is the cognitive after image? What is the echo in your head?
Does it feed me?
In your body? Does it feed me? Yeah, and I kind of came up with, does it feed you?
I stole that from you.
Hell yeah, you did.
Does it feed me or does it bleed me?
Straight from the feed me or bleed me?
Well, it's just so beautifully written there because it is the permission to give yourself that opportunity to reflect, because that's something you're like, I did it, I got through it. And so I'm realizing how much dissociating I'm doing in my day-to-day life. Thank you, Adam, for that.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I was curious about, I mean, that is such a good indicator for something post, but how do you know in the moment that you're actually connected?
So it's so funny. This term mindfulness has been circulating throughout psychology, and I'm glad it's been getting its time. It's thousands of years old. All of the ancient wisdom traditions have used it to some benefit. And mindfulness, to get rid of the woo-woo and to get rid of the abstractions and the like and confusion, it's just being aware of what's going on while it's happening, or being aware of what's going on while it's going on. So something we really need to allocate our RAM space in our brains too, like, hey, periodically pinging ourselves, like, how am I feeling as I'm doing this thing? Many of us, by the way, when we've been fooled by someone who's trying to run a scan on us, haven't really checked in with ourselves. Like, there was a part of me that kind of knew I was going to get screwed over.
I knew it.
That deal seemed too good to be true. Did you check in with yourself enough? Were you able to manage and say, hang on, I just need to take a moment. I'm just going to go to the bathroom and maybe splash some water on my face and just check in. Like, does this make sense? Am I going to agree with this deal? Is this an exploding deal? Like, I don't know if you've ever heard that term, an exploding deal. It's like, this deal is going to go away. And am I just doing this under pressure out of fear of loss aversion? And will I be more screwed if I actually do say yes? So pinging ourselves in the moment, whether it's, you know, being in the presence of somebody who is sucking life out of us or someone who's trying to scam us or anything, it's really an important incentive to check in with ourselves periodically. Now, if you're in flow, if you're with a best friend, you don't need to check in with yourself. You just know.
I'm having a great time.
I'm safe. This is awesome. Somebody I just was speaking to, a brilliant psychologist by the name of James Cordova, he gave me the best definition of intimacy I've ever heard. It was vulnerability meeting safety. Like, if you know you can be vulnerable and it's safe, you have true intimacy. And by the way, intimacy, a lot of people listening may kind of have conflated that with eroticism and sexuality. It's not. You can have a very intimate, what's that?
We tried to break that down here on the podcast.
You do? Good, good.
Because it is those friendships and the intimacy you share closest to you. And yeah, that it is a very nuanced word. Absolutely.
Well, and vulnerability and safety, like a lot of things that we've discussed, that felt safety aspect is so important. And we often confuse when you hear safety, people immediately think of physical safety. We're talking about felt safety. And it's a completely different ballgame.
Completely different ballgame. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Amy Edmondson. She's out of Harvard Business School. She's the one who coined the term psychological safety. And one of the things that we know about psychological safety is not only is it important in the context of the relationship, but companies who have psychological safety, in other words, the basically a credit line to screw up. Like I can make a belly flop and keep going. Like back in the day, I believe that Pepsi, or at least one of these companies, made sure that everybody on its marketing team registered the number of mistakes they made, because they knew that if people weren't making mistakes, they weren't trying. And you had to be comfortable sharing those mistakes with the team. That's psychological safety. This was my belly flop. And I believe even people like Tim Ferriss often ask people, like, what was your favorite mistake? I think this is a very good practice. If we ain't failing, we ain't succeeding, because we got it. Right? I mean, it's a cost of entry. As Dory Clark told me once, that, you know, failure is just data. And Guy Kawasaki once said, you got to make an ass out of yourself. And it's a kind of a Hawaiian pigeon term. You got to make ass. Yeah. And I love that term. And I realized the only reason I've ever done anything good in life has been because I've screwed up along the way. And psychological safety is so crucial. And in order to have intimacy, as we were going kind of bring it back to that, we need to have that psychological safety, that sense of like, I'm okay here. I'm okay here. I can show you my, I remember when I hired, it's funny, when I was newly licensed as a psychologist, I hired a consultant because I wanted somebody to kind of comb through my cases as I was doing them. And the person who I had initially hired, it was not particularly safe. She would comment and say, oh my gosh, you think that? And we stopped. And the next person, I said, I want to be able to show you my warts. I want to be able to show you my mistakes. And he very intelligently said, oh, you said, so you basically want to be able to bring your whole self to the meeting. I said, yeah, that's what I want.
And that would be ideal.
And I ended up working with him for way north of a decade, and he's the greatest guy. But psychological safety is the term that we need to really ask ourselves. Is there psychological safety here? Am I able to give it to them? Do I say TMI? Do I roll my eyes?
I was going to say my trigger would be TMI.
Oh.
Yeah, too much. Yeah. Wrong energy. Yep. That's
this is going to limit this is going to limit things.
Oh, you and I share another little synchronistic moment of guilty pleasure. I'm like, sign me up. Like, guilty exactly. Says who? I hear somebody's rocking at that. I want a piece. And so I thought that was great. I was like, oh, he gets it.
So yeah, to comment on that, I said, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure as long as you're not hurting anybody else. I talk about my love of George Michael. So like in high school, I identified kind of as a rocker and a punker and in certain ways, and like kind of more of the new wave alternative rock. And in my circles to acknowledge or admit that we liked something that was not cool. And by the way, that included Duran Duran, because that was kind of, that's more for the teeny bopper and the females. Yep. And I love Duran Duran. And I love George Michael. George Michael, yes. You know, has the greatest voice of all time. And I was so glad when Taylor Hawkins of blessed memory, the drummer, yeah.
Rest in peace, bud.
Rest in peace, brother. Oh, my God. May you have your crown royal up there. And my gosh, Dave Grohl. Anyway, Foo Fighters, for those of you who aren't familiar, the drummer, when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, he literally said, and you can see this on YouTube, he said, and it's my hope that one day the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will admit George Michael. Years later, years after he died, after Taylor Hawkins died, posthumously, they included George Michael. But George Michael was somebody I would only listen to with my windows rolled up until I was like 30. Like God forbid anybody saw me. And now I let my freak flag fly. I blast it.
Own it.
Yeah, 100%.
An amazing story. I love Duran Duran. I love Wham.
And amazing.
I had the same thing going on with the guilty pleasure. And for me, this person turned into my favorite artist of all time, and it was Prince. But Prince,
really? I mean, it doesn't get better than Prince.
Right. No. But early on, Prince. You know, like this guy wearing makeup, it just wasn't cool. And we were the heavy metal, hard rock. And so we do not use guilty pleasure. That is not an acceptable term in our household.
I got to ask you straight up, buddy. What is your, if you had to choose one Prince track, I know it's an impossible thing to answer.
For lack of, I can't use profane language at the moment because the one that I would pick might have some words, but
Control.
I
got it.
Blank Control or
nice.
When Let's Go Crazy comes on, I really lose my mind to that just because it's got that energy and it pumps everyone up. But if you've ever seen the movie Purple Rain,
oh yeah.
You've got Morris Day and the Time doing their dances. Like, I'll get up there and start jungle loving anytime I hear Let's Go Crazy by Prince. But
it's such a jam. That whole album, literally not a single song is less than a complete banger.
Yep.
And, you know,
Parks and Rec, complete banger.
Really?
Aziz Ansari, he had a banger. Yeah.
Aziz Ansari. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I'm going to go with the beautiful ones.
Okay.
Just hits me hard. And of course I got to go with Purple Rain as well. It's such a Stairway to Heaven anthem. Exactly. It's like, if you really hear it and really, really hear it. I remember I'd heard it in high school, but it was when I was an adult that I really could hear it. Mm-hmm. Like it was like, oh yeah, this is good. But now as an adult, it's like, oh my God, what is going on? This is so good.
So, gentlemen, how did it feel when you had to deny your Wham love, your George Michael passion? Was that a sign of a disconnect? What was that experience like in the.
I would say it was like a limp handshake.
Oh!
Stole that from Adam.
Was great.
Stole that from Adam as well. From
Limp handshake. Oh.
Yes. And it's,
It's
and
like
we
the
all
Wet
can
William
relate to
handshake.
that
Sorry.
so. Yeah, we can all relate to that so much. Feeling connected, feeling disconnected, the difference between that strong, confident, I'm in this present moment handshake and the limp handshake. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I go to
absolutely.
parties all the time and I get the limp handshake and it's just kind of like, ah, oh, it's just
Why'd
such
you
a,
come? Yeah, come on,
for
guys.
sure. And sometimes what precedes is a good connection, but I loved what Olivia Fox Gabang said about charisma. She said, "I don't care what kind of watch you're wearing if you give a limp handshake. Like you
Yes.
know, the handshake rules. Like, if you could be wearing the world's most beautiful, expensive watch, and if it's a limp handshake, it's like that is a bad first impression. You don't get a second chance."
Absolutely.
And so I think we've tempted our love ninjas with the this power of living the life that we love. Is there, how do we get there? What's the formula? We've tempted them with the end game. Can you enlighten us on
Sure.
the path?
So I do, I mean, obviously recommend people read the book to see like what lands with them and pick and choose the pieces. But you meant you were kind of giving a wink to our connection formula. We all have individualized connection formulas, and the connection formula is what makes us feel most alive. Like, let me give my father versus me I come from him. I'm 50% genetically similar to this man. And yet, he could sit through a 6-hour Wagnerian opera, and I would call it a very expensive place to sleep. And I can go 2 or 3 hours of, like a more common opera, like an Aida or a Carmen, but I cannot do a 6 hours of
Not
whatever
filling
that
your
is.
cup. Nope.
Not filling my cup, but fills his. And there may come a time when I actually get it, but I don't get it for now. But he could go through 5 lifetimes without petting an animal. I cannot make it through a day. I am absolutely pet obsessed. I love my pets. I got and I love dogs, and I love and I and I talk a little bit in the book about how I am a convert. I actually hated cats, and now I love them.
Yes,
And they're
we have one
amazing.
here.
They're
Yeah.
absolutely, you have to find the right cat, but I also just needed to understand, like, cats are not dogs. There were a whole bunch of things that were required for me to actually get the whole cat memo. But
Fair. That's fair.
my dad does not have part of his connection formula around pets. My wife, she and I are so similar in so many ways, and she will not watch Lord of the Rings with me, and I do not want to go to an improv dance thing with her. Improv dance, like, sign me out.
Not your area.
I cannot do that. I'm not a dancer. I'd like to be, but it's not part of my formula. And it's our job, really, between this birth date and this death date, during the dash, between these two things, is to find what makes us feel most connected, not what we're told should. Many of us, I'd listen to certain bands, and I won't, I'm not going to crap on them right here, but I would pretend that I was into them, but I wasn't. And my
Yeah,
friends were.
conforming
And
to, yep.
absolutely
Guilty. I'm
conforming.
guilty.
Absolutely. I'd conform, but it didn't fill my cup at all.
Yes.
I get that.
And so if we listen to your podcast in order for us to feel connected, what advice if someone's like they're getting the book's on order, great. What is one thing we can do in our right now, a simple today, to feel more
Heck
connected and start down the
yes.
path of this life?
Well, I would first get to know who you are and what you're about, and like kind of giving your scales, like 1 to 10. How much do I really like this restaurant? What do I really want? It can be very hard to know what we want. Like, I work with these incredibly intelligent, successful people. When I ask them that seemingly stupid, simple question of what do you want?
Oh,
They're rendered speechless. I don't
yes.
know. They've done all the right things, and they feel totally like, that line from David Byrne, "How did I get here?"
Yep.
It's like, damn, like it's
You get in that rut, the stuck of Yeah, which is going to stink the least, which is, you know, I don't know what I want. I'm just,
I
yeah,
don't know
going
what
through
I
the motions.
want. And this is what I'm, it's almost like, you know, my part of my practice is midwifing people's like desires, like saying this is having them being able to articulate like what they actually want and not feeling guilty about it. Oftentimes, you know, like somebody might be in a fight with their spouse and feel very guilty for seeming selfish by articulating what they want. I'm working with a guy who basically said something akin to, you know, my wife really wants me to have more boundaries, and she asked me to have more boundaries, and so I started saying no more often, and she didn't like it. And then he said to her, "But you told me to have more boundaries and to say no more often." And she said, "I did, and I didn't say I'd like it." And so, but the relationship is doing better. It's a net positive for them over time, even though there is a little. I often use the metaphor. You guys don't have ocean out there, but if you can imagine some poor schmuck on the beach trying to get his boat through the shore breakers, beyond the shore breakers. I don't know if you've ever seen this on the beach, but some guy is in an inflatable and he's like, "I'm gonna get past these shore breakers," and he's like taking 5 minutes and he's just getting pounded, but eventually he does. And when you get beyond the shore breakers, it's just open water.
That's
And
where you
so
put it.
that's part of the deal in terms of finding our truths as well. Sometimes finding our truths feel, it's not like the universe is going to suddenly welcome you with open arms. "Oh, you found it." It's not that Enya thing. It's more, it's you're going to get some pushback very often.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it'll welcome you with open arms, but very often there will be pushback interpersonally or inside of you. The demons that we have to battle, the messages we were told, like to even articulate what we want might sound narcissistic or selfish, and it's not, not necessarily.
Right.
I
And
hear you.
again, I know you probably love getting quoted to yourself, but we've established how much we love the book. But this
Oh.
absolutely, the midwifing desires, I thought was great. But on page 101, for those reading at home, entitlement to our joy is the key to all connections. We deserve to live fulfilling lives. We have a right to seek the things we desire. Mic drop, permission granted. Adam Dorsey. Wow.
Wow. It's so funny. There are 86,000 words in that book, and I can't recall all of everything I wrote, but that I'm glad I put that. I'm glad I
Yeah,
put it.
you nailed it.
Thank you.
I'm
Oh my
so
gosh, that
glad I
feels
could
like a
read.
million bucks to hear.
I hate to be the guy watching the clock, but we are running out of time. And so we've become big fans of your podcast, and we love how you close it out with a big question to your guest. And so if you don't
Would you be
mind,
willing?
we're going to sort of steal a line, another page from your book
By all
with one
means.
question. And that question is, if you're willing to share a little piece of your life, maybe a small moment that you'd like to savor or one bucket list item.
Oh, coming ahead
Yeah,
in this
that you've
bucket
got
list.
coming up.
Ooh, a
You
small one.
guys, you
I like
know,
it.
even the word savor has become scientifically researched, and it's like, how many of us are not there when we need to be there for the thing that we're supposed to be there for? So I'm so glad you brought up savor. One of the things that I actually need to work on getting better at doing, by the way, is the there are three parts to really enjoying a thing. It's the looking forward to, it's the experiencing of, and the looking back. And I am really good at the experiencing of and the looking back, but I'm not very good at the looking forward part. And I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe there's a part of me that worries that it's not going to happen, or
Ah,
that I have so many
self-protective.
to-dos and that my RAM space and my brain doesn't have. But my wife and I are going. I remember landing in Italy when my wife was pregnant with our first boy. And I got out of in the Rome airport. It was Easter, and like I was out of my mind at with how great this place was. Like, this is
You were at
like
the Pope's house, as in,
I I was at
after
the Pope's house
an
on the on one of the Pope's most sacred of days. And it
Yep.
was actually, oddly enough, when Pope John Paul was just about to die. He actually died while I was there. I had be clear, I had nothing to do with that. So it was a very sacred time. But Italy for me is like everything I want in a country to like on vacation. Like it's just, it's got the history, it's got the beauty, it's got the people, it's got the language, it's got the food, it's got the music. Like what does it not have? It is perfection. There are maybe a few other countries that are, you know, like the prince of places for me to visit. And Italy is certainly one. So we're going back for the first time in nearly 20 years. Oh, actually in 20. Oh. Is it 20? Am I high? It's 20 years. So yes, wow. It's been 20 years. And we're going to be going to the north and I'm stoked. And I want to be able to savor the looking forward to part. And for sure, like, so I'm just beyond stoked.
I call that menu planning.
Menu planning. Foodie. I love that. You're a fellow foodie.
Yes. Like, and I was lucky enough to live in Florence for about 6 months. And so they ate well. That was about 20 years ago, Adam.
So yeah. I was there 20 years ago, too.
It was, 2005, January to June.
I was in Florence right then. I was in March 2005.
You believe this is a miracle? I think it is.
Molto Italia.
I loved it. My Italian does not work.
Oh, I'm gonna io vorrei studiare un po' italiano. I'm gonna try to study it again before I go. But
how exciting! That's wonderful. You're
greatest
going
place
back.
On earth. Oh my god,
that's great.
That's amazing.
This has been above and beyond.
Unbelievable.
Your expertise, you're lucky. Thank you for making the time and for all of our love ninjas. Super psyched. Unleash the power of the four types of connection and live the life you love.
Go get it. It's amazing.
JT and Jordan, you guys are positively vibrating and magnetic. You guys are the best.
That's so kind.
That
I can't
way
wait.
Too kind.
We'll get the band together again soon.
My world is blown. That was so awesome.
World is blown. I feel swept. Like it's not, I'm swept up, not in a mosh pit, but like a sway pit of glitter with my best friends. Is that your sensation?
I got mopped. I'm not swept away. I'm mopped. Love Ninjas and Rage Pirates out there, you need to get more Adam Dorsey in your life. The podcast goes by the same name of Super Psych, just like his book. He has two renowned TED Talks.
Yes, Adam's presence on the TEDx Talks are fabulous. One on friendship and adulthood, who doesn't need to listen? And then Men and Their Emotions, both outstanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really did blow our minds. This has been so incredible.
Yeah. Our connection, we listened to the podcast and we're like, we feel closer. We're doing something right in our relationship. But he has outstanding guests and it's really fantastic. I am so thrilled we got to have that experience.
I'm different. And Rage Pirates, Love Ninjas, thank you so much for being here with us for this conversation. We do this all for you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm Jordan.
And I'm JT.
Thank you for keeping us curious.
Be brave, beautiful friends.
Until next time. If this podcast, or just JT, means something to you, it would mean the world to us if you had a second to share this episode or your favorite episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow on the homepage at letsdigintothat.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We adore you, Love Ninjas.
And we see you, Rage Pirates.
Thank you. Thank you.